Welcome back to This Is Why We Watch Movies. I'm Brian J. Hutchins.
And I'm Landon Higgs.
And today we have some gnarly stuff to talk to you about.
Absolutely.
Yeah. How was your day?
Not too bad. I had a couple of classes, but, you know, I made it here.
Wow. That's exactly what you did last time.
Exactly, yeah.
Film school life.
That's it.
That's crazy. Well, let's not waste any time jumping into our main review. We're going to be talking about Argylle, the new film by Matthew Vaughn. He is the director of the Kingsman series, as well as X-Men First Class, which is actually the only thing I knew him from prior to this.
And Kick-Ass, that was another one.
I hadn't seen that one.
Yeah.
But I did know he did it.
Right.
Doing research for this, I didn't realize that he and Guy Ritchie were, like, kind of connected.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. There's definitely, like, a connective tissue there for sure.
Yeah, it's intrinsically weird to me. I was trying to mute it for me to cough, and it didn't work out.
I think you're going to hear it from this one anyway.
It's okay.
Yeah.
It wouldn't have been as loud.
We're both a little under the weather, but we're here.
Yeah, I finally joined Landon down here, which is crazy.
Yeah.
But anyways, initial thoughts of the movie. It's the breakdown of the story without getting into the weeds. It's about an author who ends up being chased by a evil spy division in order, because a book that she's writing apparently has knowledge about a plot that's unfolding currently. And so it's kind of an action comedy. It's kind of a comedy drama. I don't know exactly how to label it, but it's more of a spoof than anything.
Yeah, I'd say spy comedy. I don't really know exactly what I would call it.
Yeah, but it stars Sam Rockwell and Bryce Dallas Howard, as well as...
it's got a pretty good cast, honestly.
Yeah. Bryan Cranston was there briefly.
Yeah, he was there.
Yeah, it has a great cast, and I think that Sam Rockwell really was the standout of the cast.
Yeah, but that's pretty normal.
That is normal. I took a note during the film, mentally, that Sam Rockwell is like a better version of Owen Wilson.
Ooh, I actually kind of agree with you there, yeah.
I don't know if that's a hot take, but, you know, I'm just putting it out there.
I can see it. I agree. I can agree with you on that. I haven't really thought much about it, but no, now that you say it, it makes sense.
Yeah, I think both of them fall into this category where I've known about them for a really long time. So my first exposure to Sam Rockwell was the 2005 Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Yeah.
And for Owen Wilson, I think it was either Night at the Museum or Cars.
Yeah, that's probably the same for me too.
Yeah. But anyways, so that's the main thing, is I thought that the acting, or at least the cast, was particularly good, and acting-wise, Sam Rockwell is the standout.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm hard-pressed to think of other things that I liked, but I guess we should probably get through that before we jump into the bad stuff.
All right, let's just put it out there. This movie is fun.
Yes.
That is the biggest pro for this movie.
I actually wrote that down as one of my pros.
It's... Yeah, that's my number one pro, is that I had fun watching it. Regardless of a lot of the issues that I had, there was a lot of good moments of fun. There were some pretty good memorable sequences in it.
For sure.
We could talk about one specifically later that I was thinking about whenever I was talking about memorable sequences. And then the humor works sometimes.
Yeah, most of the time.
Yeah.
I think that it's interesting the way that the film is edited against... it has a really good pop soundtrack, actually.
Yeah.
Some classic songs and some newer songs that all make appearances, including Now and Then by the Beatles. Which,
even if the timelines don't match up on when they said that they were, you know, it's a whole thing.
That's a whole thing. But Now and Then, the final Beatles song that you may have listened to, is heavily featured, and I think the basis of Ellie's motif. And also,
yeah,
there was like a remix of it wasn't a remix, it was a cover of a Snow Patrol song. So
yeah.
It was like, the soundtrack was just designed for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's all the good stuff I had to say about this movie.
Yeah, that's kind of it.
So, moving into some cons that I saw, I think the biggest one is there wasn't enough Dua Lipa.
That, yes, I just wrote Dua Lipa as a con because, yeah, she's gone after the first 5 minutes. Yeah, it's so sad because, like, yeah, I was just there for Dua Lipa. Let's all be honest about it. That's what we were all there for.
We're all there for Dua Lipa.
And spoiler alert, she's killed off in the first 5 minutes of this movie.
Yeah, I don't even think that's a spoiler. Literally every scene that and shot that she's in is in the trailer. It's just everything. Not.
Yeah.
As long. Like, there's a little bit added, but essentially, if you've seen the trailer, you've seen Dua Lipa's role in the film.
But I'll say this about the trailer, since we're talking about that. It really was just, like, kind of the first half of the movie that you see in the trailer. You see nothing from the back half of this movie.
That's true.
Which I appreciate, like, that, you know, going to the back half of this movie, I'd seen everything, like, everything in the trailer had already happened, so I was like, oh. So everything from here on out, I have not seen.
Speaking of having not seen things from the trailer, the most important part of the film that's in all the marketing, are you ready to meet the real Agent Argyle?
Yeah.
Landon fell asleep.
Okay.
Despite him saying that he liked this movie.
I wrote this down because I was going to tell this story. I don't remember when exactly I fell asleep, but I woke up and yes, the reveal of the real Agent Argyle had happened and I was so disappointed in myself.
You couldn't have been asleep for that long because I recall talking to you within 2 minutes of that.
Yeah, I don't remember. I don't even remember what the last thing that I remember was. I just remember them waking up and, you know, and they were. I don't want to spoil it because, you know.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the real Agent Argyle revealed what happened and I was asleep. This whole thing, that was all this was about.
It's the only I thought the only thing this was about was Dua Lipa.
No, it was all about Dua Lipa, but then the second thing was finding out who the real Agent Argyle was.
Okay, I'm glad we have our priorities straight.
Yeah.
I think this is probably a strange con to point out, but I think that the tone was just all over the place in this movie. Because it's not like Naked Gun, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not like a full-on spoof where they're just going at it like we're making fun of spy movies. It tries to be serious at times, and I don't think it has the self-assurance to realize that it's just a spoof.
I don't think that it's trying to be a spoof is the problem.
That is exactly what I'm saying.
Like, it's just too goofy, and it's not a spoof.
Yeah.
But I want to take a step back for just a second, because I want to talk about Kingsman, like, specifically Matthew Vaughn leading up to this.
Okay.
Because to me, there's the first Kingsman movie, I find it's very good. Like, I like the first Kingsman movie. It's got a charm to it. Like, there's an energy to the first Kingsman movie that I really appreciate. That I feel like everything that he's done in that universe since has just been lacking. It feels to me like all of the charm is just gone.
Sure.
That's kind of my thing about him right now. They're starting to feel more cliche, where I feel like the Kingsman movie kind of understood what it was.
Right, and it comes down to this idea of, like, understanding what you're trying to do tonally with the work. Which, actually, I have a couple tonal comps here for it. I thought, and I'm going to bring this up now as opposed to later, but it reminded me a lot of, like, a botched non-science fiction version of Total Recall.
Okay.
Which is odd to say because Total Recall is somewhat botched as well.
Yeah,
Definitely. I had one last con to say.
Okay, I have a few more cons, but yeah, go ahead.
Well, I think that this can move into spoilers, honestly. I did think that the soundtrack, the Beatles song, really has bothered me. Like, it's broken me.
Yeah.
Because Now and Then was released in 2023. I think the film is supposed to be set contemporary, but the characters reference that being their song almost 5 years previously.
Right.
So the timeline doesn't make sense unless this movie is set in, like, 2030.
Right, yeah.
Which they never specify.
Yeah, I just kind of leaned over, and I probably broke the movie for him at that point. I just leaned over to him, and I mean, I'm sure you thought about it, but I leaned over, and I was just like, it doesn't really make sense.
It's all I was thinking about.
Yeah.
Like, I like the song, but I kind of wish it hadn't been used in that context.
Yeah. So, I want to talk about a couple of things. So, the first kind of thing for me is the length of this movie. It is just entirely too long.
Yeah.
And the length, I think, is just added by another con that I had, and that's just the excessive amount of twists. Like, it felt every 5 minutes there had to be a new twist to this movie. Like, the movie thought it was so much smarter than it actually was, and, like, just one, because they were a lot of just cliche twists. Like, it was stuff that I was kind of expecting by the time we got to that point.
Yeah, for sure.
And we're in spoilers, right?
Yeah, we can go and talk spoilers.
Okay, so the big one at the end being like the Ellie, the first part of Ellie where it's like, or sorry, Rachel at this point.
Rachel Kyle.
Rachel Kyle, aka R. Kyle. the moment that she shoots Sam Rockwell's character, I can't even remember his name at this point, but...
It was Aiden.
Aiden, thank you. The moment that she shoots Aiden, I was like, okay, there's some workaround here. I was like, she's not really bad. She's just doing it to get what she needs. And that was exactly what was happening. And I knew there was going to be some kind of situation where he was going to survive the gunshot. But, like, it was just throughout the movie. Every time there was a twist, I just kind of rolled my eyes. It's like after the third one, I was like, I don't need this anymore, you know? Like, it's not working for me.
No, it was an excessive amount. And I think looking at other... colleagues of ours within the film industry, i.e. professional reviewers, that's what most of them had to say as well. It's like, what is going on here?
Yeah. This one's kind of a joke, but it's also kind of serious. I'm going to say Henry Cavill's haircuts, all of them throughout this movie.
Was he trying to audition to be the next J. Jonah Jameson?
It looked like it. But then, like, the end, whenever the redneck Cavill shows up, it's also just terrible.
Yeah, both haircuts were bad. I will say, though, would we rather have his bad haircuts in this or whatever that was that Miley Cyrus had at the Grammys?
No comments. No comments. But, no, back to a more serious con that I had is, and we both kind of acknowledged this during the movie, I leaned over at one point, this movie feels so synthetic.
Mm.
Like, and I understand the opening scene feeling that way because it's, like, it's in Ellie's head, right? But
right.
But then there's other points in this movie when it's the real world where everything around them just feels fake.
Well, in large part, I think that's because it was fake.
Well, right.
There's an excessive amount of CGI in the environments in this, which, I mean, that goes into a bigger question about special effects in recent films. Because if you go look at something like Spider-Man No Way Home, large portions of that movie are just on a blue screen.
Right.
Including, like, the bridge scene. But you don't notice that mm-hmm. it's fake because there are actual physical elements of that they're interacting with.
Right.
This movie did not have that.
Yeah, if I wouldn't have noticed how synthetic it was, it wouldn't have been a problem. But yeah, it was like even stuff that definitely shouldn't have been, like the French countryside, it seemed to me like was even felt fake.
Yeah, they could have just went to France.
Yeah. I mean, I say that, but I'm not. This movie in general just feels like, I just wrote down, it feels like a Netflix original, but with a little more style.
That's a totally fair comment. I do think that it had those vibes. If it had just come out on Apple TV, I don't think I would have hated it. But that's also considering the other spy movies that Apple TV's put out.
I also wouldn't say that I hated it. Like, I have a lot of problems with the movie, but again, I had fun enough.
Right. Hate's a strong word.
Yeah.
It's more of, like, disliked, but not hate.
Yeah, another thing that I just that bugged me was the character motivations in this movie were, I didn't care,
like no,
and none of them. I don't really remember any of the characters that I really cared that much about. Like other than maybe Ellie Conaway, maybe.
You mean R. Kyle?
Yeah. Yes, or like I just didn't care. By the end, I didn't care if any of them lived.
By the way, I just realized the listener we haven't explained that. That when the real Agent Argyle scene happens, Samuel L. Jackson then pulls up a slide that explains that Ellie Conway is a alias that was created for Rachel Kyle, who is Bryce Dallas Howard's character, after she went through amnesia, and so she can't remember that she's Rachel Kyle, but that she used R. Kyle as her call sign, which sounds a lot like Argyle.
Yeah. See, I didn't even know that that's what happened. I just knew that when I woke up, they were calling her Rachel.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened.
And I was like, oh, okay. And then you read it over and you were like, Argyle. And I was like, no, this is the worst thing I've ever heard.
That 100% happened. It was a moment.
I was so upset. Ugh.
Yeah, it definitely doesn't feel like a Matthew Vaughn blockbuster.
No. It's definitely a step down. I mean, I don't even love the second Kingsman movie, and I haven't watched The Kingsman, but, like, this felt like it, yeah, just a pretty big step down for him. And now, I mean, I guess we can talk about it, but, like, the mid-credits scene, like, this is just in the Kingsman universe.
Yeah, it's now a Kingsman spinoff, and I think at some point he plans on doing a crossover between this and some other franchise he's not started yet. And Kingsman?
Yeah, I don't really care.
Yeah, like, I'll go watch action movies, but, you know, I would like for them to be slightly better.
I'm not really interested in the Kingsman outside of Eggsy's story, which is Taron Egerton's character. I think that he's the reason that those work. But we're kind of, you know, I just didn't care.
Well, I think one thing, too, is that they try to do... I haven't seen Kingsman, but I'm just going to go off on a limb here and say that his character is like the fish out of water that's brought into lunacy. Like, he doesn't understand. He's brought into this crazy world of spies. And they try to do that in Argyle with Ellie Conway. But the problem is that she is a byproduct of that world in the first place.
Correct, yeah.
And so it's not all that crazy to her in the end. And so her character journey just doesn't work in the same way.
Yeah, not even a little bit.
And that's having not seen Kingsman. I've seen, like, clips, and I know what it is. But
it's also the change happens for Ellie Conway really fast.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it is just one minute she's completely helpless. The next minute she's like, I've got this master plan to get all the files to Samuel L. Jackson.
You mean Alfie?
Yeah. Okay, let's talk about the cat for a minute.
The cat.
I'm so annoyed. Like, I'm so glad that this movie is out now so we can stop seeing the trailer.
The cat was kind of cute, though.
The cat was the biggest waste of time in the whole movie.
You know that the cat is actually Matthew Vaughn's cat.
I'm aware. To me, it added nothing to the movie. It was just kind of boring. And they used it as a joke most of the time.
Yeah.
Those didn't work. Those jokes didn't work for me at all.
No. Even some of Sam Rockwell's dad jokes, like when he's like, France is full of crepes.
Yeah. Well, you thought that was really funny.
That wasn't a real laugh.
That was aggressively loud for it not to be a real laugh.
I was trying to make fun of the people behind us.
Oh, well, that's kind of rude.
Yeah.
But, no, I'm just glad that this movie's out so we can stop seeing the trailer.
Yeah.
I just need Imaginary to come out now so I can stop watching that thing.
You mean If or Imaginary?
No, Imaginary.
Okay.
I haven't seen the If trailer that much. I only saw it in front of Mean Girls.
Yeah, So IF is the one.
It's the John Krasinski
one. Yeah.
But I'm talking about Imaginary, the one where it's like
the horror movie.
The horror movie, yeah.
They have such similar titles and concepts that it's kind of stupid.
Yeah, I'm just... I was so tired of seeing the trailer for this movie. But, yeah, that's kind of where I'm at on it. So I'm glad it's finally out.
Yeah, I mean, it's out. We can say that we saw it, which is nice.
Yeah.
We can flex that we know who the real Agent Argyle is.
Yeah, even though I didn't get to see the scene. I'm going to keep repeating that.
I know who it is. But yeah, I do think within Apple TV and even Netflix, like, spy movie world, I enjoyed this one much more than a lot of those.
Yeah.
Like, I'm thinking Red Notice, Adam Project, Ghosted, Family Plan, and there's another one. But, like, all of those...
Did you say the... What was the one that came out last year with Chris Evans?
That was Ghosted.
Did you say that one?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, sorry.
No, I liked this a lot more than Ghosted.
Yeah, me too.
So, overall, like, I can say it's a successful Apple TV movie.
Yeah.
Going into the weeds of the action scenes, though, I think we should talk about that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I've totally forgot.
Yeah.
The scene that I was, like, kind of blown away by the, like, I thought about once we left the theater was the oil skating scene.
The oil skating scene.
That was a lot of fun.
It was hilarious.
Yeah.
I liked it. I think that the way that the... Obviously, that's a set piece that you remember.
Right.
If you dial it back to the beginning of the film, when Sam Rockwell saves Ellie on the train.
Yeah, that was a really long scene. I also went to the bathroom in the middle of that one, I'm going to be honest.
You did, and it was still going when you came back.
Yeah.
In fact, the characters were in the bathroom when you came back, weirdly.
Yeah.
But that scene starts off fairly grounded in the way it's shot. Like, it's not exactly Bourne-esque, but, like, it's handheld, it's got, like, movement, and there's physicality to it. And then as the scenes progress, as you get to the later fights, it's much more floaty and fake feeling.
Oh, yeah. But yeah. It's a lot of fun.
It's fun, but it takes me out of it for sure.
Oh, for sure. I mean, it's definitely a different thing.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I enjoyed that scene a lot. It just like at that point in the movie, I was not necessarily fully into it. But right. That scene, I just laughed. I was just like, this is fun. Like, you could just, this just looks like somebody who is like, I have this crazy idea. I'm going to do it. So, I don't know. I enjoyed that.
I do think that, like, empowering Vaughn to, like, just do the weirdest thing he could think of as well is one of the things that this movie does well.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
The scene that immediately precedes the oil skating is the Rockwell and Howard characters, like, doing some kind of gun fu dance and, like, smoke bombs.
I didn't enjoy that one nearly as much.
But it had Snow Patrol.
It did have Snow Patrol?
Well, it didn't have Snow... It had Snow Patrol's words, but not Snow Patrol, and that kind of upset me.
Yeah.
Justice for Gary.
Oh, it's okay. I don't really care.
I mean, he had to sign off on it, so...
Yeah, I'm sure he's fine with the check.
Yeah.
But no, that scene to me, I didn't enjoy nearly as much. I don't really remember that much about that scene.
I remember Snow Patrol.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. I don't remember the rest of
but
it.
But we also kind of talked through that scene, to be honest.
Yeah, I was like, hey, dude, you're... It's Snow Patrol. And then I think I actually just started singing the song.
Probably.
Yeah, that tracks.
But, yeah. So some of the action scenes really worked for me. Other ones did not.
Yeah, and I think that's the whole thing with this movie. It's like, large parts of it worked for me, and large parts did not.
Yeah.
I think it all comes back down to the tonal thing of it not knowing if it's a spoof or serious movie. And, that puts it into, like, the mediocre category for me.
Yeah, for sure.
Do you want to go and share star ratings?
Sure.
Okay. So, on Letterboxd, I gave this one a 3 out of 5. Because I really did enjoy my time with it. And I think I'd watch it again, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I'd revisit it, especially on Apple TV, if, like, I'm bored and just want to throw on something I've seen. But I think it'd be closer to a 2.75 out of 5. Because 2.5 seems too low and 3 seems too high.
Yeah, so I just went ahead with the 2.5. And to me, that feels a little high. I'm kind of in the same boat as you. It's like 2 just felt too low.
Right.
But 2.5 honestly felt a little too high for me. So if there was an option for a 2.25, I probably would have sat about right there. But so I just landed on a 2.5 just because I was like, I round up. I don't really care.
Right, like 3 is rounding up from 2.75.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to get in the weeds and go call Letterboxd customer service and say, introduce quarter stars.
Which I don't really want that. It would be kind of annoying.
No, and it would cause anxiety.
Oh, yeah.
I'd have to figure out which quarter star.
Yeah, for sure.
Jeez.
It's like having 10 options is hard enough. Don't make it even more.
Yeah. But no, I think, you know, if you're looking for a fun movie to just go watch and shut your brain off to, this is an excellent choice.
Oh, yeah. I think the people in the theater around us enjoyed it a lot.
Oh, yeah. I think especially for, I don't want to be derogatory, but for folks that are not film bros,
yeah,
they might enjoy this a bit more than we did.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. So.
I do know that some people did leave, though. I noted that there was 2 people who left.
Yes, they left. I don't blame them.
Yeah.
That makes sense to me. But you know what? Sometimes you should watch movies that aren't going to make you leave.
So, I don't know. I'd never leave. Actually, there was one time when we both left, but again,
I've left several times. I don't have tolerance for bad movies.
I don't know.
This is a perfect time for you to insult my movie taste, by the way.
Yeah, his movie taste is just... Ugh.
Disgusting.
It's awful. I don't know. Again, we agree like 65% of the time, I think, on stuff.
It's interesting that almost every review we give is within a half star of each other.
Yeah.
For the most part.
I mean, there's definitely something that we won't agree on, but...
Yeah.
So far, we've only really done 3 reviews, but...
Well, I meant in general, but yeah.
Oh.
Anyhow, speaking of reviews and Letterboxd, I think it's time to move into our top 5 list for this week.
Yeah.
We're listing out our top 5... spy comedies or you know, spy spoofs, etc. I always get that wrong. So I'll start us off in 5th place. I put down a classic from our childhoods, which is made by one of my favorite directors.
Yeah.
Spy Kids by Robert Rodriguez.
Nice.
I think it's just a fun time. I don't know if it holds up, but it's just silly and goofy, and it knows that it's silly and goofy in a way that Argyle doesn't. So I still really appreciate Spy Kids and the DIY aspects of it.
Yeah, I just totally forgot about that when I was making the list, or it probably would have made it. The first two movies, I think, hold up. I watched them a couple of years ago, and I was like, this is still a lot of fun.
Yeah. The fifth Spy Kids movie that just came out last year is garbage.
I never watched it.
Yeah, I don't.
I don't know if I watched the fourth one either. Oh, I did watch the fourth one.
I did not.
I watched it in the theater, I think.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. It was the one where they gave you, like, the bag of stuff. It was, like, 4D.
It had the scratch and sniff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I also, in the fifth spot, went with a childhood classic, because when I thought about spy comedies, this was the one that stuck out to me that I watched a ton as a kid. Agent Cody Banks.
Ooh, Agent Cody Banks. Nice.
That movie is just fun. I haven't watched it in a few years. I need to go back and rewatch it, but that was like the first thing I thought of.
Yeah, no, that's one that I've watched. It's probably been about 10 years, actually.
Yeah.
But I did enjoy it.
I'd say probably 5 or 6 years ago for me. But yeah, it was like that. The first both of those movies, me and my brother watched a lot, I feel like, growing up.
I see. Well, the next one I have on the list actually has kind of an Argyle connection.
Okay.
The Man from U.N.C.L.E. by Guy Ritchie.
Okay, that is also my number four, so we can just talk about it together.
Wait, what?
Yeah, that's my number four as well, yeah.
Crazy. But yeah, so not only do you have Henry Cavill from Argyle, but you also have the Guy Ritchie and Matthew Vaughn connection there.
Yeah. It feels like it could be a Kingsman movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've always really enjoyed this one.
Me too.
When it came out, I thought it was fun. I'm a big fan of, like, regular spy movies, and this one has enough of, like, the regular spyness about it to pass, but it's also aware that it's, like, a goofy 60s comedy.
Yeah.
And it has enough of that to, like, keep you going.
I also just enjoy the Armie Hammer and Henry Cavill in the movie. The way they play off each other it's good.
Is it, like, okay to, like, to like Armie Hammer these days?
I don't know that it is, but in this movie, I don't know that he should work anymore, but...
I mean, yeah.
But I think this movie, like, the U.S. versus Russia, you know, dynamic, and the way that they played it was very funny, and it worked for me.
Yeah, no, I really enjoyed almost everything about Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, my number three is True Lies by James Cameron.
Okay.
It's been a few years since I watched this one. But it's essentially a marriage comedy. There's a spy who's retired, and he gets thrust back into action. Of course, he's played by Arnold Schwarzenegger. And his wife, Jamie Lee Curtis, goes to find him and ends up becoming, like, a counteragent at the same time. Then they have to fight bad guys. I don't remember the story particularly well, but it's actually a funny movie, and it's not too spoofy that it's, like, insanely stupid.
Yeah, this is one I haven't seen. I started it, and I watched the first 3 minutes of it, a couple of weeks ago, and I just haven't gone back to it yet. I will at some point, but...
Yeah, it's definitely, like, an odd man out in James Cameron's filmography.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like a James Cameron movie just looking at it from the outside.
Yeah, I mean, it came out between T2 and Titanic.
Yeah.
And, like, I don't know where it came from. I haven't really looked that deeply into it, but it's, like, his only, like, non-science fiction, non-historical epic movie.
Yeah, he's probably like, I just need some money to go diving, so can somebody give me some money and I'll make this movie for you?
Yeah, and I think he did.
Yeah. Okay, so my number three is Spy, starring Melissa McCarthy.
Ooh.
This one is really, this one shocked me at how good this one was. So Melissa McCarthy plays, she works for the agency as, like, an analyst, and their main spy ends up going, I think he ends up getting killed at some point, and then she has to go out in the field as an undercover agent, and it's just really funny, because she's, you know, it's a fish out of water, but she also works for the agency, so she's not, like, completely out of the loop of what's happening, but she still has her issues with it. So this one I think is really funny.
I think I missed that one, but I definitely have it on a list somewhere of stuff to get to eventually.
Yeah, I think you would really enjoy that one.
Yeah. Well, my number two is something a bit more on the stupid range.
Mm-hmm.
I have a couple more things to say about the actor later, but in 2011, there was a sequel to a classic British film, and it was titled Johnny English Reborn, starring Rowan Atkinson.
Yeah, this was the one I was expecting. Yeah.
Specifically, this is the second of three movies. I'm not a big fan of the first one, and the third one was just okay. But Johnny English Reborn is a surprisingly funny movie, and it gets the visual humor correct, in my opinion. And it's funny just how self-assured the character is in this one versus the first movie.
Okay.
So, yeah, out of the three, this is the only one that I would ever, like, consider rewatching.
I haven't seen the second one.
It's a lot better.
But I also just didn't like the first one at all.
No one likes the first one.
Yeah. So my number number two, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So my number two is actually Kingsman: The Secret Service. This movie's a lot of fun. Taron Egerton's great. It felt like Matthew Vaughn knew exactly what he was doing with this movie. It didn't feel as disjointed as Argyle did. But then this movie, it's just a lot of fun. That's just all I can say about most of these movies, is they're just fun.
Yeah. And I think being fun is, like, the main part of it. An honorable mention, this almost made the fifth place
okay. On
my list. I need to see Kingsman at some point. But honorable mention, until I remembered Spy Kids. I was trying to think of another, like, childhood spy movie that I saw. And the only one that could come to my mind was Cars 2.
Oh.
And I was like, I don't think that deserves to be on this list.
No.
But we need to give it a shout out.
No, we don't.
Yeah, we do.
To be honest, I don't think anybody should remember that movie.
Well, I don't know. The part where Mater's like, I am the bomb. And then Lightning's like, I love your self-confidence. Yeah.
No.
Fantastic.
There's nothing, there's nothing redeeming about Cars 2. I don't like the first Cars movie.
No, you're not a Cars fan.
And this makes Cars look good. And that's saying something, because I think Cars is bad.
Yeah, Cars is not my favorite Pixar movie, but I don't hate it.
Ugh.
But Cars 2 is kind of similar to how I feel about Argyle. Like, it's a movie that I went in and had a fun time with.
No. I even as a kid, I remember just being like, this is just weird.
Well, the cars are talking, so.
Well, as a kid, I liked the first Cars movie.
Okay.
So it wasn't that. It's just like, as I get older, the more I hate Cars.
Well.
Whereas a lot of other Pixar movies, I enjoy more as I get older.
How do you feel about Planes? Okay, anyways, what do you have an honorable mention?
Well, my honorable mention is Spy Kids, because I didn't think about it.
Okay, that's fair.
But, no, other than that, no. I haven't seen many, like, spy comedy movies, so it was, like, very hard to put a list together, honestly.
Yeah, I've arguably seen too many. But one, my number one is something I saw more recently.
Okay.
The Men Who Stare at Goats.
Oh, yeah, I remember you talking about this, yeah.
Yeah, this movie is wild.
Yeah.
Basically, it's actually very similar to another movie that we'll bring up here in a bit called Origin, but it's about not at all.
What?
Structurally, yes.
Okay.
It's about a writer who goes investigating something that he hears about.
Okay.
And it takes him on an international journey. But essentially, there's a soldier who claims to be part of a psyops-like division within the army. And they all were, like, using their mental powers to walk through walls and control people's minds. So George Clooney is the soldier, and Ewan McGregor is the journalist. And basically, there's literally a line where George Clooney says, I will teach you how to be a Jedi, to Ewan. Which makes this movie amazing, because Ewan McGregor is, in fact, Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yeah, we're all aware.
Well, not everyone's aware.
If you don't know, I don't really know how to help you.
That's true. But, no, I think it's a funny movie, and it's just so random that it had to go on the top.
Yeah, so the first movie that I actually thought about when we talked about, like, spy comedies is a Coen Brothers film. It's probably not surprising. I love their work. But it's burn after reading. And this movie is just absurd. It's about two like gym employees who stumble upon some discs from the CIA. And then it just, it's insane. It's got Brad Pitt. Like, it's got a great cast, as most Coen Brothers movies do. But, like, it stars Brad Pitt. And I don't want to say anything else about it, because I think that everybody should see this movie, because it is just insane.
We like insanity.
Yeah.
But yeah, as always, we love making top five lists and debating them. You can always follow us on Letterboxd for more information on our lists and stuff. You can just look in the description. There, our handles will be down there.
For sure.
But yeah, so for our last segment today, we want to talk about stuff that we've been watching recently. Yeah. I think you should probably go ahead and go first, because okay. I think you have a lot more than me.
I don't think I watched that much this week, but I probably, yeah, I probably have more than you did. So, that's the wrong thing. Since we last talked on the podcast, I watched Jurassic World.
I watched that too.
I watched a short film called Unedited Footage of a Bear. I watched that while I was on the toilet. Probably didn't need to give you all that information, but that's just what happened. I was bored on the toilet. I was like, let me just watch this.
That was cough laugh worthy.
I watched the new release of Miller's Girl. Just to put this out there, I do have a goal for this year of 100 new releases and 400 movies in general to watch. So I'm seeing a lot of new releases, even if I know I'm not going to like them. Then I watched two Paul Verhoeven movies. I watched Showgirls and I watched Total Recall. One of those movies, I think it's too much hate. The other one does not get enough.
And you won't say which one.
No. Then I watched a couple for class. I don't really need to mention those. And then we watched Origin together. We're going to talk about that here in a minute.
Yeah.
Then I watched the first Rush Hour movie.
Ooh.
The Beekeeper.
Ooh.
I watched M for class.
Ooh.
And then Argyle.
Yeah. Well, that's a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
It's more than me. So it would behoove me to mention that we watched Battleship Potemkin.
Oh, we also did watch Battleship Potemkin, yeah.
Jurassic World, we watched together. That movie was not nearly as good as I remembered it to be.
No, I ended up giving it 2 stars, which I remember it being like a 3.5-star movie when I first watched it.
Right.
But this was just bad.
Yeah. Like, no, there's no redeeming qualities about it.
No.
I also watched Total Recall, which is, I'm going to say, it's one of my favorite Arnold Schwarzenegger action comedy science fiction films, which is a very specific niche.
Yeah.
And it's still only 3 stars for me.
Yeah, it
has its problems.
Yeah, I also gave it 3 stars, but I feel like our 3 stars are very different in this case.
Yeah, like for me, it's like, I think it's a decent movie that I'd watch over and over again.
I don't know that I'm going to rewatch this movie.
Quato is king. Anyway.
Oh, no, not Quato, dude. I'm so tired of Quato.
Open your mind, Landon.
It's so bad.
Open your mind. I love Quato.
Yeah. Now, you made Quato unbearable, though, honestly. Because leading up to it, you just kept going like, can you stomach him? I'm like, dude, I don't care.
Quato, also, when Quato appeared, I laughed for like a solid 10 minutes.
You did. You thought it was the funniest thing. Like, the entire time that Quato was on screen, you were dying laughing. Because he's only in the movie for like 10 minutes. Spoiler alert. But
yeah, this is like the 4th time I've seen the movie as well.
I don't know how you've watched it that many times, because I did not enjoy it.
It's a gnarly time. And then, on the token of other things, because I watched this before we went to go see Argyle. I watched a documentary about the history of Mr. Bean called Happy Birthday, Mr. Bean, and realized that Rowan Atkinson and Richard Curtis are basically besties and had been working on a ton of stuff through the 70s and 80s. And then I was like, the world makes so much more sense now.
Yeah, it explains a lot, actually.
Yeah, like the entire thing. I'm like, yeah. Oh, okay.
It's like, oh, that's, he just wanted to get his friend in there as much as possible, so he just like had him connect everybody.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah. I think that's totally fair. But yeah, let's move into talking about DuVernay's origin.
Yeah.
So, what can be said about this movie?
It's beautiful.
Yeah. I think that out of everything that I just mentioned that we've watched, this is the most powerful thing I've seen new release wise this year. I mean, I'm not going to say like other things are not as powerful, but the I think that it's a beautiful movie. It has a visual style that you don't generally get out of films that puts you into the character's emotions more so than their headspace.
Yeah.
And it captured that so well. And the acting was fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. I think that this movie, to me, there's just like, there are specific scenes from this movie where she just makes choices of how to kind of put you in the character's perspective, like into their emotions. And the way that she does it, it just wrecked me. Like, it is visual storytelling to a T. She doesn't need to tell you anything. She shows you and you know.
Yeah.
Like, it's so good.
You feel it so deeply inside, and then it's like, those specific shots linger with me.
Yeah, like, I've not stopped thinking about the leaves since we watched that movie.
The leaves are beautiful. And then it's a shot in the trailers. I forgot what the main actress's name is. Hold on. I'm going to probably botch the pronunciation. I'm just going to go with Ellis Taylor. That is her surname.
Yeah.
There's a shot of her laying in the leaves as the leaves fall on her. In the context of the film, this is after both her mother and her husband have passed.
Correct, yeah.
And she's, like, left alone with her emotions. But it definitely, like, conveyed grief in a way that you don't normally get out of just, like, a person sitting in a room.
Yeah.
It did something else. And then it had reverse shots going back to the people that were gone. Like, she's looking at them through the leaves falling.
Yeah, it's just... You can't forget it once you see it. There's also another scene towards the end of the movie. I don't really want to spoil it.
Yeah.
But it's just two characters laying on a towel.
That one's so much.
It was so just. This movie is, in a way, like, so soul-crushing.
Yeah, and it occurred to me that I'm just talking with the assumption that y'all have seen it or at least know what it is. It's based on a book called The... Cast, The Origins of Our Discontents by Isabel Wilkerson. This book came out in 2020, I think in August, so before the election, but after the murder of George Floyd. And it deals with the idea that the caste system from India or Germany is connected to the systemic racism that exists within U.S. society.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting thesis. It's one that I don't fully understand from the film, but I actually checked the book out of the library because I wanted to, like, dive deeper into it.
Yeah, I plan on reading the book too. I think the big problem with, like, I think that the reason that this movie, to me, I think the negative that I have to say about the movie has to do with it kind of loses focus.
It does, yeah.
And the second act of the movie, I feel like, is kind of all over the place.
It is all over the place, and then it comes back pretty strong.
Yeah, the first and third acts are masterful, but it's the middle that just throws it off for me.
Yeah. I wish that more people knew about this, because I think the big thing for me with Origin is that anytime I've mentioned it, people don't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Which is crazy, because Ava DuVernay is, like, such a well-known director.
Right, yeah.
Whether it's from Selma, which is the big one, or A Wrinkle in Time, or 13th, right? And so you would think that, like, her name would have some kind of pull, but, like, this movie got no marketing.
Yeah.
I think we only saw the trailer one time out of all the times we've been to the cinema, and that was for Ferrari, perhaps.
It was for Ferrari, yeah.
Yeah. But the book, it's not verbatim based on the book. It's based on the writing of the book. The main character is Isabel Wilkerson, and it follows her as she's doing research and writing the book between, like, 2018 and 2020. It just has really powerful scenes. It goes over, like, hot button topics is the wrong word, but it goes over relevant things that I think are important to know about.
They shouldn't be relevant anymore, but they are.
It's unfortunate. And, you know, controversy-wise, I think that this movie, the reviews that I've seen about it, most of them didn't mention the unfocused part.
Yeah.
They're either going into it with the perspective of this is a masterpiece or it's terrible. And I haven't really seen anything that's like more grounded with the in-between take that we have.
Yeah.
I think it's beautiful, but I do think that Selma is a much better movie.
I agree.
On a filmmaking standpoint.
Yeah, I gave this a 4 out of 5.
I did as well. Yeah. Yeah, like it's a good movie. I don't think it's a perfect movie by any standard.
No, but I think that everybody should see this for sure.
Go see it. Be prepared to be emotionally wrecked.
Yeah.
Be prepared to open yourself up to like just existing within the space of the film.
Yeah.
I've tried to bounce around the fact that there's some triggering content in this.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Like obviously, it, with the subject matter of caste and racism, it is going to be triggering, but specific events that it recreates, which were surprisingly fresh for me. I felt myself emotional when watching the dramatization of this. One thing, which I'm not going to spoil.
Yeah.
You should go into this not knowing what I'm talking about.
Which I don't know if we ever looked it up, but I was wondering if that was the actual audio.
Yeah.
Because I meant to look it up after the movie, and I just totally, like, after everything else that happened in the movie, it just kind of flipped mine to think about.
We're going
to
do that right after this.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a powerful time, and I don't think there's anything else quite like it.
No.
At least in cinemas right now.
Definitely not right now,
and
yeah.
For the last while, for sure. I do wish that we could see perhaps a documentary adjacent to it that has to do with, like, Wilkerson's research to make it... It's not that it's not digestible, it's just reading can be a bit difficult, so... I think that the film does a pretty good job of like diluting her main ideas into like a digestible snack, but it's very clear when watching it that there's more to her theory.
Yeah, there's definitely more to the theory that we're not really getting to explore because it's very surface level as far as like what we actually learn from her in the movie.
Right.
So I'm gonna read the book and hopefully we'll have a better understanding of where she's coming from.
Yeah, but no, I think that like it's an important movie, and if you have it in a cinema near you, it's not playing at all cinemas.
No,
the Regal near us didn't get it. I think last time we told the story of how bad the Point was with Interstellar, we actually did go back to the Point to see Origin, which was unfortunate because it was the Point, but it was okay because it was Origin.
We were the only ones in the theater, so we were able to kind of like talk amongst ourselves about, you know, kind of the things that we were feeling during this.
We were able to process the movie out loud as well.
Yeah, which was really nice, because I think just sitting there the whole time, I think it would have been a different experience. But yeah, getting to process it out loud with somebody else was a good way to experience the movie.
Yeah. So if it's not in a cinema near you, definitely be looking for it. It's probably going to come out on streaming sometime very soon.
Yeah.
And we can't recommend it enough. Do you have anything else today?
That's it.
Yeah. Well, thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode or the previous two, be sure to hit the follow button. We'll have a new episode very soon. And, I think that's it.
All right. Bye.
Bye.